Welcome to the Solution Focus School's Unlimited podcast series. My name is Dr. Linda Metcalf, and I'm the author of Counseling Toward Solutions, the first book published in 1995 that took the solution-focused approach into classrooms from kindergarten through 12th grade. Now, in its third edition, you can purchase it at Routledge.com. Today, we're going to be talking about the mindset of the solution-focused approach. And to help explain what that is, I'm going to go back quite a few years to the year 1974, when I first started teaching middle schools. I was told when I was hired at this school district that I had better walk and carry a heavy stick because I looked way too young, and if I did not carry such a heavy stick, the students would eat me alive. The person who hired me said, just go in and remember, don't smile until Christmas. And I remember being surprised at that because I had just finished up at Baylor University in the School of Education, education courses that talked a lot more about working with students and class management, not with a lot of detail and not with a lot of solutions, but just how important it was for me to maintain order and get my points across as a teacher. I was not told or reminded or even warned that there might be anything such as disrespect in a classroom. I was instead on a high. I was excited to be a teacher, couldn't wait to start teaching my first class. And so I did. I went in, didn't smile, tried to maintain order, and everyone, it was miserable. I would go home each day and cry and tell my husband, I can't do this. I can't do this. This is not what I signed up for. And he would say, well, try and relax and maybe tomorrow will be a better day. But it wasn't a better day for that entire year. And over the summer, I decided that I was going to put aside those suggestions and go back and just love my students, because you see, I really did. I love middle school kids. I loved how they would be angry one minute and bring you flowers the next day. I loved how they would come in so excited about the newest rock song and then settle down and be curious about planets that I was talking about. I loved it. So the next year I went back and I loved them. And I had an amazing 7 years after that. Solution-focused mindset is about looking at students differently. You're going to hear all kinds of things from teachers, parents, administrators about students. I'd encourage you to hear that as only one description of the same person and to look beyond those descriptions at the little person who sits in front of you when they come into your office. The solution-focused approach talks about this as having a mindset where You're not looking at problems, you're looking at the person. In other words, it's non-pathological, which means putting aside any descriptions such as ADHD or bipolar or oppositional or disrespectful or whatever else, different kinds of labels walk into your office along with the student. By putting them aside, you give the student a chance to show you another side. And that's where I think, above all things, the solution-focused approach shines. Because it's not asking you to fix something that really you have no power over. You can't fix a disrespectful student. You don't know what he or she experiences at home, nor can you fix the way that a student learns differently. But what you can do is begin to ask the student what they need from you and what they wish they could get from their teachers. And from there, that's what we follow, because that gives us direction for the conversation. Another idea that I hope can help you create a solution-focused mindset is to realize that you don't really need to know why the student is not doing well in class, being disrespectful, being disruptive, doing things that are not appropriate, you don't need to know why. Because here's the thing. Even if you could discover why, chances are it's not changeable. Nor can you go back into the past and restart the past and have it turn out differently. Knowing why something happens, in fact, often makes things worse for us because we start thinking, well, he can't because, she can't because. And that traps both them and you from being at your very best as a counselor. So the solution-focused approach doesn't encourage you to figure out why a problem is happening, why a kid got in a fight, why the student talked back to the teacher. Not necessary. Instead, much more helpful for you to be able to listen to the student come into your office or listen to the teacher. And after you've listened, come back with one important question, the most important question you could possibly ask at the beginning of a conversation. That question is, how do you wish things would be? And if you get answers like, my teacher would stop harassing me, or my mom would get off my back, or that kid wouldn't be bothering me as much. You see, those answers are talking about what they don't want. And again, I'm not very good at talking or thinking about what people don't want and what that would look like. So I've come back with another question. And the question would be, instead of that, instead of your mom getting on your back, instead of the kid harassing you, instead of this, instead of that, what would be happening instead? Then we get someplace. An answer might be something like, my teacher might call on me, or my teacher would leave me alone. I get that a lot. Then I want to ask them, okay, she'd leave you alone. And what difference would that make for you? That's a very important question too. What difference would that make for you? That question is almost magical because it begins to look inside a student's mind or a teacher's mind, if it's a teacher you're talking to, and find out the value of something different happening. When we can help them make that happen, we've got them. There's no more problem with motivation because we're honoring what they want. And so let's say you find out that what difference it would make to me by a student might be, well, I'd feel like maybe they're leaving me alone and then I could concentrate or something. And maybe if I concentrated, I could get my work done. Or maybe a teacher might say, well, if he would stop throwing desks across the room, that would make a difference for me. And I ask, what difference would that make? And the teacher might say, well, it might be quieter so I could teach students. And then I like to ask again, what difference would that make, Ms. Johnson, when you could teach students? And the teacher has often come back when I've asked that question, because I've asked it a lot, with, I'd get to do what I really want to do, which is to give these students some information that I think is valuable. I love my subject. I want them to like it as much as I do. Okay, then I come back with, so Ms. Johnson, if we could talk about some things that might help you get to that place, maybe even on a small scale, where you can talk about your subject that you love so much, would you be open to trying a couple of experiments? I've yet to have somebody say no. That opens the door. I now have a direction. And from there, we can take off. You see, solution-focused mindset, we've got to have direction from our school client. And in this case, it's the teacher who wants to be able to teach. I could follow that question up with, okay, can you tell me exactly what would be going on that day? Suppose like a miracle happened and you were in fact teaching like you want to be teaching and you were sharing the subject that you love so much. What would you be doing on that day? What would your students notice you doing on that day? That's when you see smiles and you hear a giggle or so and you go, oh, wow, this is what I would be doing. And then you see how important that goal is to the person. We're going to talk a little bit more about what comes after that question in a few minutes. Another part of having a solution-focused school counseling mindset is to go slowly and focus on strengths and abilities that have happened before. So let's suppose that same teacher who said to us, "My goal would be to teach the subject that I love so much." And I honor that by saying something back to her like, "Okay, so suppose you did that for a day or a class, and you were teaching just like you wanted to teach, and the students were listening, what would I notice you doing?" What we're doing there is creating what I call a preferred future. What's the future is that the person wants or prefers. And chances are, if I'm talking about a preferred future, I'm asking lots and lots of questions like, what else would you be doing? What would the students notice you were doing? What would I notice you doing if I walked by and looked in your classroom? What else would I see? What else would I see? I probably ask what else at least 10 times. Because you see, the more I get my school client, which in this case is the teacher, to build in her mind what she'd be doing specifically, even where she would stand, even what she might even wear on that day, what books she'd be talking about, what topic she'd be talking about, and how would the students know she loved that subject like she's telling me she loves that subject? Those are details that are priceless because they help the person know so well that by the time they leave my office, they are walking and talking, being that teacher who loves her subject and she's ready to go. But there's one more question I will ask her before she leaves. And that is something called an exception question. And that exception is simply a time when she was teaching like she wanted to be. You know, chances are, here's the thing. People tend to want what they've had before. Why else would they want it? So if a teacher says to me, "I want to be able to teach my subject so that students know it because I love my subject and I'm passionate about it," to me, that tells me she or he has experienced that and they want it again. So I'm going to ask about it. "Tell me times when," I might say, "tell me times when you have been able to teach your subject in a way that people knew you were passionate, that you loved it, and your students listened to you. What were you doing? What was the lesson you were teaching them? How did you teach it?" And that usually brings a smile. And sometimes somebody will think and say to me, "Gosh, I just don't know. It's been a long time." Yeah, I bet it has. But let's keep thinking. Go back to that time. Go back to that day. Go back to that situation where you left school at the end of the day and you thought, "I did it. I convey to my students what I love about my subject, and I feel good about that. I think they got something today." And I'm going to wait. I'm not going to suggest anything. Throughout this entire process, actually, I don't suggest anything because it's not my solution to be built. It's my school clients. The same thing goes for a student who comes in and says, "I just want the teacher to get off my back and leave me alone." Okay, makes sense to me. In fact, I'm always probably going to say that as long as no one's harmed, that makes sense to me that you want that. What difference will it make for you when you get that? What difference will it make when she stops pushing you or gets off your back? What else would it do for you? When you do that, you're also doing something really, really important. You're lowering resistance. It's hard for people to resist you talking about something that they want. However, we often see resistance happen when we talk about something that isn't necessarily the student's goal or the parent's goal or the teacher's goal. So this model says stick to what your school client wants. They're the ones who form the goal. They're the ones who tell you where they want to go. And the same process. "I want the teacher to get off my back." I'm likely to say, "Awesome idea. Tell me what might be going on." Let's say you go back to class. And just for the next class period, you find a way for the teacher to stay off your back. What exactly might she notice you doing that would tell her, I don't need to be on his back, just for this class period? What else? What would your classmates notice? If I walked by the hallway and peeked in, what would I notice? What would anybody else notice about you that would tell them, man, there's no way she's getting on his back today, because he's doing blank. He's doing this. He's doing that. What would they notice? And again, this is building the preferred future. Student may say, well, I won't be talking out loud. Okay, instead of that, what would you do? I'd be quiet. What else would you do? I'd be listening. How would she know? I guess I'd be looking at her. Okay. See how specific these answers are? And then I go again to my exception question and ask, so tell me times when you've been in a class where no way that teacher's going to get on your back. No way. What did you do then? What would the teacher say you did then that made such a difference? Notice how I'm always asking the questions for the next idea from the student, teacher, or parent, meaning I don't have to come up with something new. I don't have to figure out what the student, teacher, or parent needs to do. Can you imagine how much less stressful your job would be when you start doing that? I can promise you, not only will it be less stressful, it's going to be more delightful. I want to share one more idea with you before we stop this podcast. And above all the things that I've shared with you, to me, this is one of the most important ideas I could share. As a school counselor, I remember countless times when I would have a student referred to me by a well-meaning teacher or administrator, and using the solution-focused approach, we would go through the steps I just shared with you in this podcast, and the students would be smiling. You'd see hope in their eyes. You see them almost excited to leave your office because they felt like they could do something different that might work out in their favor. And then you send them back to class, to the same system that helped to create the issue in the first place. It doesn't take long, usually, for the same student to be sent back to you. Many people call them frequent flyers. So I learned a long time ago when I was a high school counselor and middle school counselor and even elementary school counselor that when I talked to a student in my office, I learned to never send them back by themselves. Because again, think about the dynamics. They're walking back into the same context where the teacher sees them as the same disruptive, misbehaving, unmotivated student. And that's the only way he or she knows how to relate to them. And I've seen it happen. I've walked back with students, which I'm going to share with you how to do that in a second, and knocked on the door and asked the teacher if I could talk to her or him for maybe 30 seconds. That's as long as this takes. Honestly, that's all it takes. And I see the teacher come out and look at me with a smile, then glare at the student. You know, teachers are only human. They've got 30 kids or less in their classes, and one more that's going to cause a problem again, they're not happy to see him or her. So I've learned from experiences with teachers who are a little on the upset side to shake their hand or even just say something kind to them like, thank you for stepping outside with me. I know you've got a lot of students in there you're teaching. I want you to know something. I've just talked to Jose or I've just talked to Susie, and I do appreciate you sending them to me. We have talked a little bit, and Susie or Jose, they've got some ideas to try out in your class this afternoon, just for this class period. I would really like it if you would watch for those things he or she is going to try out, because you see, I think you deserve a classroom where you can be the teacher you want to be. I work for you, Miss McCoy, as much as I do these students. And more than anything, I want you to be able to teach like you want, have class like you want. So Jose or Susie, they're here. Again, we've talked about some things and they've come up with some ideas all on their own. These are all their ideas, by the way. Would you just watch and see what they do today? That's all. And I'll come by tomorrow and I'll talk to Susie and Jose and see what's going better for them and for you. And thank you so much for talking to me. And off the student goes. What happens there in those 30 seconds is absolutely incredible. The first time I started doing that, because again, I'd have kids come back to me. First time I started doing that, walking to the classrooms and talking to teachers. Of course, the teachers were surprised to see me not in my office. But after I explained why I was there, there's a relationship that kind of began to be built between teacher and I. And teacher put on a different set of glasses to see the student I was bringing back to him or her. I started noticing. I didn't see those kids as much. I would go the day after and walk into the classroom where the student was, and I'd ask the student, what's going better? I'd ask the teacher, what's going better? Notice the question. I'm not saying, how is it going? That opens the door to problem talk. I'm not into problem talk. Instead, it opens the door to having them think for a minute, what has gone better? And when they tell me something like, well, he didn't exactly get off track yesterday as much after he came back from talking to you, I like asking the teacher, wow, what did that do for you? Because again, my focus is not just on the student or my school client, it's on the teacher too. My goodness, they need our help out there today. I am convinced that if many of us tried to talk with teachers like I'm sharing with you today, we might save them from leaving the profession. Because our dear teachers, they're still dealing with the same strategies that I learned in 1973. I know because I look at programs across the country. They're just struggling to figure out how to work with kids today. When I take kids back and I walk back the next day and I ask what's better, and I get to say to teachers, wow, what did you do to make that happen? Guess who gets built up? Guess who feels hope again? Guess who feels competent? And when I ask the kids what went better, and they tell me, well, I didn't get in trouble. Oh my gosh, are you serious? How did you do that? I have to admit, a lot of times they don't know the answer. And that's just fine. I don't need to know an answer. All I need to know is that things have gone better. I will admit, though, I will tell them when they say they don't know. I said, you know what? I don't know either. Think about it. And the next time I see you, maybe you can tell me then. The ideas I've expressed to you in this podcast, I hope, will give you some hope for this year too. To where maybe as you work with students, teachers, and parents, you too begin to feel hope at the end of the day. By not asking about problems, and instead getting into solution building, I have a hunch you might feel that excitement too, and that passion that brought you into this profession. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast today. My goal is always to bring you ideas to help your job go easier and to reach more students, parents, and teachers. If you like what you heard today, go to my website, solutionfocusedschool.com. There you will find a wealth of resources for everything from handouts to documents to webinars that I've done in the past that you can listen to for free. Therefore, helping you to be the best school counselor you can possibly be and revitalize that passion that I know is inside every single one of you. I look forward to seeing you too on the next SF Connection. That stands for Solution Focused Connection. That is a free webinar that I do every other week during the school year. I've done it since March 2020 when COVID hit us. And as a result of lots of people attending, I kept it going. So we are starting our fourth year of SF Connection. So go to my website, solutionfocusschool.com, and you can find a place to sign up for SF Connection and also something called Monday Ideas. That is also a little note that I send every single Monday during the school year. A lot of times it's just some things for you to read so you can approach a student a little differently, or it's something you could send out to your staff. They're going to think you're awesome. So take care, enjoy your school year, and I will talk to you soon.